Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and our Paradigm Shifter today has got a lot of different paradigm shifting embodied in her book, The Bond. The Bond is a wonderful, compilation of research about how connected we all are as a species and how we can empower ourselves with that. So welcome to the show, Lynn McTaggart.
Thank you so much, Veronica. It's nice to be back with you.
It's wonderful to be back with you, and you're going to be up here on the West Coast, headed to Whistler soon, giving a workshop, aren't you?
I am. I'm really excited about it because it's such a beautiful place. It's a beautiful retreat, and it's just a perfect place to, I think, start helping people really make a dramatic shift.
Well,
I think it's a place away from the ordinary where we can all explore some real tools to do that.
So actually explore our bond, the way the bond actually goes through us all, eh?
Exactly. And also how to make the bond. I mean, I think what a lot of people don't, you know, realize, even if they are in the spiritual community and interested in all of this stuff, is that this whole shift that we've all been talking about in 2012, mm-hmm. you know, there seems to be a tendency to believe or to propose that the shift is going to happen a little bit like fairy dust, mm-hmm. that's going to just descend over all of us, and then we'll suddenly be a new species, and we'll suddenly not being the competitive, individualistic people we now are, but be very cooperative and elevated and all of those things. And I'm one of those people who don't believe that, because I think we can make the shift, but we have to do something really important, and that is to examine the hard drive we all have, you know, that we've been brought up with, that we've been conditioned to understand the world as, and that we've been conditioned to operate as, which is a hard drive that basically operates by the simple two phrases, I win, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the kind of mindset we all have. We're all, even the most spiritual among us, have been brought up to think of life as, you know, a race to the finish line,
mm-hmm.
and that we have to compete in order to do well. So it's what
I notice among a lot of spiritual healers, too. A lot of us are pushed to go, you know, if I don't get noticed, if I'm not the one that's noticed, I won't have enough business.
Exactly. There's a great deal of New Age opportunism out there,
yeah.
A huge amount of it.
And it's like we don't know any better. But I want to say this. You have been talking in the bond about, talking to me today, because I'm going through it in different days, you know, about group consciousness or being able to get together around different subjects, like instead of just being a Republican or a Democrat or a pro-lifer or whatever, mingle in different groups because of the possibility of entrainment? Isn't that where we could break down some of those things? Is that right?
Absolutely. That is, you know, my big message has been the power of a small group.
Hmm.
You know, most people think and look at groups as being a group of individuals who are just like them.
Mm-hmm.
And they think those are the only people they can really get along with. And that's what they seek when they seek, you know, people to hang out with and people to work with and people to, you know, to live near and get things done with. And one of the reasons that we are in such a mess right now and so polarized, particularly in the U.S., is that tendency to only be with like and to demonize anybody who doesn't believe as we do.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've demonstrated in the bond, I hope, is that there's an incredible amount of evidence that demonstrates that when you do a common thing together, some common activity, some common purpose, and it tends to be referred to as a superordinate goal, you know, a goal that we can all work together toward, everybody's brainwaves start resonating in synchrony. And people who were divided before become very close. So it's a very simple way, you know, think of it as barn building.
Mm-hmm.
But barn building on a small scale or a big scale is the thing that brings divided people together. And so one of the things that I'm really encouraging is the magic of this kind of connection in small groups. And, you know, I've seen it with my intention experiments because I've been seeing and working with small groups, and I've found that there is an extraordinary tendency for people to come together and to connect. You know, when there is a, when people come together in a small healing intention circle, which is the sort of stuff that I've been experimenting with for about 5 years, I get people together in groups of 8 to 12.
Okay.
And I ask them to send in healing intention to somebody in the group with a healing challenge. And it's just remarkable, Veronica. You know, to my astonishment, people who were sent the healing healed on the spot.
Wow.
Got better of all sorts of things, arthritis, you know, eye problems. One woman could barely see out of one eye, and she got about 80% better within 24 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I mean, I was astonished by
it. Now, were you in person, or are these online? Or
no, these are in person, but I've also done it online.
Mm-hmm.
No, these are in-person workshops with me,
mm-hmm.
And people working in these little groups, just being divided, my audience being divided into groups of 8 to 12. But I also witnessed something else really interesting. The people doing the sending also got better.
Hmm.
People who were, let's say the person being sent healing had a healing intention, had an arthritic hip. It would be the case that the people sending the intention who had maybe arthritis somewhere, they felt better too.
Hmm.
And I've found this also on, you know, when I've done this on phone teleseminars, you know, and things like that, it's, you know, we've had the same result. Now, I used to think it was the power of intention, but I actually think it's now the power of connection.
Hmm.
Because people report afterward, you know, there's crying, there's sobbing, there's, you know, hugging, and people report afterward, I've just never felt so supported because there were these group of strangers here who were sending loving intention to me. So,
and they likely come from different walks of life and so on. They're not all homogeneous, right?
Exactly. These are people they've never met before, and they're suddenly really close with them, and they feel that connection. And we feel what we're supposed to feel.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to feel connected all the time. We're supposed to bond. I mean, our whole selves and our biology have been hardwired to connect to people, not to compete with them.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly, this is like the real human experience. And it's been really fascinating for me to watch this and track what happens over time, too. And people report after a while. I've been surveying people over time. What happened to you after a big intention experiment or a little one like this? And they report being kinder to strangers, feeling closer to everybody they come into contact with. They change. Something is plugged in a lot more.
Hmm.
So
what do you think happened to make us so separated? What happened to create a society that's so dog-eat-dog?
Well, it's a lot of things. I mean, a lot of things write the story we live by, but, you know, the main emphasis and the main, I would say, influence is science, because we act in the way we think we are. And science has explained to us and explained about the world that, you know, we are individual entities competing for survival. I mean, that's thanks to the ideas of Newton, who described the world as being populated by separate things, separate well-behaved things, and then Darwin, who described a whole worldview of lack and of struggle, mm-hmm. and of there not being enough to go around.
But I am also taken back into the time of the Egyptians and so on, and it was really competitive, wasn't it? Wasn't it all kind of about power and taking over each other as well?
Well, but
as
in
well
a lot
as
of
high
those
concepts.
Other, maybe, but in a lot of those worldviews, they were much more a sense of a unity and a connection and an idea of the cosmos being much more connected,
hmm.
than it was after the scientific revolution and then the industrial revolution. I think there was a sense of much more connection than there was after that. So if you want to look at the, you know, the real influences, I think, on our modern day structures and what's happening, and also why everything is collapsing around us. I think you really have to look to around the Industrial Revolution, because there was very much the sense that, you know, we do best for society by looking after number one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really arose from, you know, the Adam Smith model, the burgeoning capitalism, the industrial model, that where, you know, there wasn't a holistic universe anymore. There was a sense that, you know, the world operated just like a steam engine. It operated like a machine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's really been our thinking up until now, up until
modern
time.
And money was the way you related to your success, like whether you were successful or not, right?
Exactly. And, you know, all of that became a mark of individual distinction. And also, there was this idea that you needed to be individually distinctive in order to benefit the whole. And so I'm not talking about communism as an alternative, and I want to really put that out there. I'm not talking about socialism, but I'm talking about the fact that we've got to an end point of individualistic thinking where everything is falling down, and it will. If you aren't connected to anybody and you're not trying to connect to anybody, then ultimately anything that you consider a society will no longer be one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where we are at the moment. We're really at an end point of all of those structures we created that were so much based on competition, whether it's education or financial model or our business model or even our neighborhoods. You know, mm-hmm. our neighborhoods are now very divisive.
Or even our political model. Our economic and political models are very divisive. You know,
in America, it just doesn't work anymore.
No,
you know,
I keep
in America,
seeing
it is just collapsing. I mean, it's now got to an end stage of corruption
mm-hmm.
where, you know, even the Supreme Court is very corrupt and political and politicized. And so
and nobody knows who to trust, Lynn. Isn't that the big thing right now? No one knows who to trust.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No one knows who to trust. And so what my model is all about and my handbook is all about, and I hope this will be considered like a manual for a new world, that's what I always wanted it to be, is to stop looking at the big top-down model and to look at the bottom-up model,
mm-hmm.
but to formulate little groups and have those little groups come together for some common goals. And they could be some very radical goals, or they can be very simple goals, like just starting to get together with your neighbors and taking turns helping each other garden, or sharing the school run, or sharing food, to many more radical ideas for people where, you know, who live in really burnt out neighborhoods and neighborhoods that aren't working at all anymore, to the whole idea of getting your neighborhood together and doing bartering
mm-hmm.
for food supplies and bartering of services for all sorts of things, to even some models where the neighborhood is the savings bank. As opposed to trying to put your money in a bank where there's no interest rate. That happens routinely in Japan. They use a system called Moai, where 10 people get together, they take turns, they all put money in a pot every month. Whenever somebody takes the pot, they start paying interest. So the next people coming up the next month end up collecting a lot of interest. It's a far better system than currently with banks. And a far fairer one, too, because, you know, people are actually getting interest rate on their money where they just don't now, even though banks are able to pay, you know, record bonuses. They're not paying any interest rates to people, certainly here in the UK and in the US.
And that's because they can get away with it, because they have power, right?
Exactly. They can get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. So our systems are really corrupt now. We have to start over. We have to start over by understanding who we really are. And that's what the purpose of writing The Bond was at first, was just the whole idea of giving us a new story mm-hmm. and basically trying to demonstrate, well, we never were meant to be this competitive, individualistic thing that we are now. nature has designed us to connect in every way and to feel better when we do connect and to prosper much more when we connect. And it's there in every bone of our bodies, in every way that we operate. We're just automatically trying to connect with people all the time. So if we go with that impulse, we will be much more successful. But now with the new version of the bond, I called it, the subtitle is now How to Fix Your Falling Down World, because that's what's going on right now. And I wanted to help people wipe that competitive hard drive clean. Because I think we can proceed, but we all have to reprogram ourselves to think in a very different way.
And part of it, you were talking about connection, but part of it is connection to the earth too, isn't it? I mean, isn't that a part of the thing that we've lost in this individualistic situation?
Absolutely. I mean, it's connection with the earth, connection with each other, connection with larger groups, understanding how to cross divides, not exploiting the earth for just personal gain.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more a native culture idea of the fact that you exist as part of a whole, an interconnected, I like to call it an intergalactic superorganism.
Yeah.
That's what we are.
Wow.
That's what we are. We're connected to everything.
Well, that brings us back to evolution, doesn't it? This is the possibility of this time where we can evolve into that, right?
Well, absolutely. I think we're having to evolve into that. And, evolution has always been preceded by crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I think organisms are lazy things. They're lazy entities, and they probably wouldn't evolve if they didn't have to. So, we've got to a point of an end of days of this way of being. So we have to start looking to new ways of being. And we're all looking to the next step. We all recognize that the old way is not working anymore. And so what I've tried to provide in the bond is essentially what I see as the four necessary steps. And the first one is we have to learn to see much more holistically, because we've been trained with a certain kind of very narrow tunnel vision that allows us only to see essentially what's in it for me. And so we have to learn to see much wider. And that will also help us to connect much better. And in terms of connection, we have to learn to relate to people very differently, because, again, we relate in terms of personal gain all the time, not for the whole concept of making the connection. When you do look at the whole idea of making the connection, you can connect across to anybody, even people who disagree with everything you stand for.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, I've provided a lot of exercises to show people and a lot of techniques to show people how to connect with people who don't agree with you.
I like that idea. So it's a handbook kind of thing, hey?
Well, I hope so now. I hope it is. And I've wanted to show people how they can, what they can do in their local group. And by group, I mean by that your office workers,
mm-hmm.
your neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
your extended family, your community, if you want to make it as large as that, your friends group, any kind of group like that, small or large, can work harmoniously and start resonating together. And also, in doing so, they can operate very effectively to connect out to other groups who don't agree with them.
Hmm.
So there are a lot of techniques to show that and to demonstrate how to do that. I talk in the book about how pro-choice and pro-life people were able to connect across this vast divide by sharing deeply about why they believed what they believed. That's a very potent technique, because when you do, you reveal something really human about yourself. And so it moves beyond the position to a connection to humanity.
Well, and you went on from that, which was so extreme. I mean, it's almost impossible to fathom for some people. But you also talked a lot about gangs and breaking the animosity amongst gang members that way as well, right?
Absolutely. You know, Orland Bishop in California is working with rival gang members in Watts in Southern California. I mean, those are the most notorious gangs in America with the highest crime rate. And he's teaching them how to relate to each other, which is just remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, he is showing them that once again, that when they look to connecting whatever it takes and putting the relationship as the goal, not being right or dominating, then everything changes. When you change your perspective on relationships, everything changes.
But how does it change a person? You know what I'm saying is, like, deep down in our gut, very often there's some kind of trauma that keeps us in that separated mode. So do you think that, what is it, deep inquiry can break through that?
Well, and I think, you know, I think you can essentially break through that with the power of connection.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're used to thinking that we can't really do anything unless we, you know, we work on ourselves first and we get ourselves completely fixed.
Mm-hmm. And which is never going to happen.
That's never going to happen. But you can connect with people immediately. There are, you know, quite a number of ways to do that. First of all, it is changing your perspective about relationships. So, as I say, if you make yourself, you make the goal becoming a vehicle of service to the connection and not a self-serving end, like being right or getting something from them, then that's, you know, one big important thing. The other is, you know, the classic one of listening actively,
mm-hmm.
you know, with your heart and mind, but listening to the way they move and what's also not being said, the unseen information that you're getting from people. I teach people a lot about that. You know, you're picking up so much information on a quantum level. How to listen to that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what people don't understand, for instance, in America, people forget that both Republicans and Democrats have mostly identical interests. You know, a love of family, a love of God, of home, of country. You know, we all want to fix the roads and the economy. We all want to lower the high price of gasoline. We all want to improve our educational system. So we have the same endpoint in every regard. And so if we were to concentrate on the larger goals rather than fighting over superficial differences, they would diminish in importance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what I'm talking about, you know, is on a big level, and nobody can see through how to do that because, you know, Congress is deliberately divisive, deliberately divisive.
Well, and I think the thing that bothers me is that we are all barraged with, there's barrages of spin, and nobody really knows what's true. You know,
no,
so
exactly.
You really don't know. You're being hoodwinked all the time, and nobody knows who to trust.
Exactly. But, you know, I don't think that's where you start. I mean, I wouldn't encourage people not to vote. I think everybody should vote. But I think you have to start with the immediate community around you,
mm-hmm.
and stop worrying about what's going on in Washington, because it's not going to change, or, you know, what's going on in Canada, you know, because it's not going to change right now. But what you can change are the people around you, are your neighborhood, and you can be an extraordinary contagion of possibility.
Hmm.
I mean, that's, I think,
the amazing
thing about it.
I love that contagion, because you talked about entrainment, and I love the descriptions of the brain and the brain patterning and entrainment, meaning we can be entrained for good or ill, can't we? You know.
Oh, absolutely. We can set off a contagion of good or
yeah.
ill, and people, because people have such a need to connect, you know, we copy each other
mm-hmm.
involuntarily.
Mm-hmm.
We copy each other's emotions, physical actions, and, you know, if I'm happy, I'm more likely to have happy friends, not because I self-select, you know, optimist, but because of the natural spread of happiness, because it's a contagion.
Right.
My emotions are contagious. And so what I suggest is, knowing this and knowing that we entrain so easily, not only with our brains, but also different aspects of our bodies, I suggest all the time that you understand that your tiny actions can be contagious all around the place. I was just speaking to somebody yesterday who decided in his neighborhood, he lives in quite a rural place, that he was going to clean up his driveway and clean up around there and just make it much neater. He set off a contagion of cleanup.
Oh,
you know,
great.
Everybody in the neighborhood suddenly thought, oh, I better do that too. And that's the kind of thing that you can do that's really simple. I mean, the science shows two really interesting things, Veronica. The first is, in a culture of greed, as we have now, mm-hmm. all it takes are one or two people wedded to fairness and generosity to start turning the whole thing around.
Really?
Yeah, that's all it takes. I mean, it's been demonstrated in economic models and in game theory and all kinds of scientific modeling.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it takes. You know, a couple of people who are wedded to fairness, reciprocity, and generosity
mm-hmm.
to turn the whole thing around. Because generosity is, you know, when it's the currency, it's so powerful, the game starts changing.
It becomes fashionable. Fashionable is a contagious kind of a point of view, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and people also are reminded who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what goes on. I mean, I give you an example with Nippon Mehta, who I talk about in my book, who was a typical Silicon Valley Turk who was, you know, up there making six figures, and then suddenly it sickened him. So he decided to start an experiment in generosity. So he convinces his mom to open her door every week. I mean, you've got to hand it to this woman.
Mm-hmm.
To open her door every week to 50 strangers.
Oh, wow.
They come in every week, rich or poor, from whatever background, everybody's invited to come in, meditate together, speak about a topic, a chosen topic, and then mom cooks for 50.
Oh, my gosh!
Every week. So he, you know, people have come from all walks of life just off the street, and there's only one disagreement that ever goes on, which is there's a big fight over who gets to do the dishes. It's that kind of service mentality that gets created. And the other thing is he keeps tweaking his little experiment, Nippon. And so the latest thing he's done is he's put up some bookshelves and filled them with inspirational books and put a sign saying, take whatever you want.
Oh, my gosh.
And there are now more books than when he's there than when he started with, you know, he started from, because everybody's bringing books now. So city is the currency. The game starts changing. And we can take that model and start applying it anywhere, that when you start becoming generous, then everything starts changing powerfully, powerfully.
Hmm.
And I think that's really what my real message is that you can start now with the tiniest of actions and create a completely new culture wherever you are.
I like that idea a lot. Jumping around, I want to talk a tiny bit about the brain, because I'm fascinated by how you've written about brain research, you
mm-hmm.
know, and I've lately been going to the Diksha, the Oneness Blessings. And
mm-hmm.
if you look online, you see the Oneness Blessings, where they do the transmission by touching the top of your head. You probably know about that.
Yes, I know all about it, yeah.
Yeah, well, isn't it fascinating? So I go online and I look at the pictures of the scans of the brain after people have gone through this for a while. And that's spreading like wildfire too, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's really fascinating because what we've got is a situation where somebody basically is entraining someone else in doing that kind of blessing. And I think that's really what's happening, is the person is in a very coherent state mm-hmm. and is able to transmit that, because we've seen from some of the scientific evidence that oftentimes in when somebody's sending an essentially an intention for someone else, the more ordered participant in it tends to prevail. So if you're
and do
nervous,
they do scan? Do they do scans on the brains of those people while they're doing intentions? That has
oh yeah, they've looked at well, they've looked at a lot of bodily, processes with a lot of different equipment, and they've found that when somebody's sending an intention, say somebody else is nervous, mm-hmm. and a calmer person sends an intention for them to calm down, the nervous person calms down and basically creates an equilibrium state that's very much modeled by the sender. So the sender entrains the nervous person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably what's going on.
I like hearing about that because then people can really feel the power of it being a little bit mechanical. It's in their own abilities. It's in everyone's ability, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's provable, which I think makes us feel more confident that we can actually keep doing it.
Well, exactly. Exactly. I think that all of these things that look at the power of intention have been studied with so much evidence. You know, a lot of people say, oh, this stuff isn't proven, but it's been demonstrated with so much evidence. There's been so much scientific study of the power of thought, the power of intention, you know, mind over matter type studies.
And I remember all the meditation over in Washington, which dropped the, do you remember that with the Maharishi group and dropped all the criminal behavior?
Absolutely.
Hugely, yes. That's the same
Absolutely.
Thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, then it with that, it wasn't necessarily looking at an intention. It was looking at what happens with meditation when a certain number of people are meditating. And they found when there was a critical mass of meditators, I think it was 1% of the population, the crime rate would go down. And the misery index, unemployment, and all of those sorts of things would go down. And so that is very interesting material, but what we're talking about there is kind of a passive mindset, connected but passive mindset.
Does that mean our resonance goes up?
Well, what I've been looking at is the power of people actually sending out a request to the universe together,
yes.
You know, people sending a common intention together, and that's had, you know, remarkable results. So I think that there's no doubt there's a lot of implications here, a lot of it having to do with the idea of the collective, of people doing things together in a group, and how that seems to supercharge the intention, supercharge the meditation.
You know, I know this is old news for you, except that I still love the story you told a couple of years ago about when the intention was sent to people in Israel who had been ill in 1995 or something, that the intention actually impacted their whole history. Is that right?
Specifically, this experiment was done by a guy called Leonard Lebovici, who wanted to debunk alternative medicine. He was an Israeli professor who didn't believe you could use scientific model to study alternative medicine. So he got a group of patients who were very ill with blood sepsis. That's a blood infection, life-threatening. And he sent intention to just one group, one of the group. You know, he divided the group, the group of patients in half, sent intention to half, and essentially prayer to that half. So to his dismay, he found that those patients sent intention were better in every way. They had got out of the hospital quicker, they had fewer side effects, et cetera, et cetera. But there was a real interesting coda to the story, which was the patients were in the hospital between, I think, the years 1992 and 1994. The experiment was carried out in the year 2000. 6 to 8 years later. So what he was doing was sending retro prayer to patients who had already well left the hospital and then analyzed the results. And he did it randomly. You know, he sent out, he organized them into groups randomly. Nevertheless, those patients sent prayer, even retroactively, were better in every regard. So he was essentially hoist by his own petard.
Oh. But it's fascinating, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because it's, you know, it suggests that intention and, you know, thoughts aren't just something that operate forward in linear time, but that once lit, you know, a thought stays lit forever.
Well, and isn't the shift all about us finding, as you already said it, our relationship to being universal beings? That's what makes me think, well, that kind of transcends time and space, and people can feel the power of that connection, can't they?
Well, yeah, I think that's right. I think that we have to understand life and ourselves as something much grander than a, you know, an individualized being operating on a linear time scale in a particular point in space. We are everywhere, mm-hmm. according to the quantum model, and we are every time. So life isn't, you know, a particular dot in a particular dot in time. Life is one great big spread out here and one big spread out now.
Mm-hmm. It's almost incomprehensible.
It is incomprehensible, but, you know, as Robert John once said to me from Princeton University, he looked at me and he just shrugged his shoulders. He said, "Take time out of it, Lynn, and it all makes sense."
That's actually true. Yeah.
Yes. Now, take time out of it, and it all makes sense. You know.
There you are in the UK. I just wanted to throw this in. You're in a very, very interesting culture, which to me has a lot more. I would say, well, obviously history, and it's got a lot more like family tie things, but it's got a hugely diversified cultural base too, doesn't it?
Well, it is probably the most diversified culture in the world. Mm-hmm. At least London is one of the most diversified cities. And people of so many multicultures live together cheek by jowl pretty well. It's a good little country. I mean, there are many other European countries that work better than the UK, I have to say. I think of, you know, places like Sweden, you know, who work very well, and Denmark work very well.
With diversification, you mean?
Well, just in looking after their, creating a society that looks after its people.
Mm.
But the UK, I think, works better than America does now because it is more of a responsive society. I mean, it has its corrupt politicians who are tied in with the financial industry and with other industries. And so we have the same problems. We're very similar in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But it also has, it ensures that no one is left without health care. No one, you know, there are many safety nets for those people who, you know, are who don't have enough money. They get to eat. They get to have shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So it has that sort of thing. But, you know, the UK could also learn from many other cultures about connection and a greater sense of society, definitely.
Now, because I often think that they're not as relaxed about saying, "Hello, you're a stranger, that's my memory." And yet they don't seem to have that many racial screaming problems, do they?
No. I mean, there are some racial issues, but in the main, no.
And
not as divided as and historical as America's is. You know, people are reasonably tolerant now, and they're tolerant about religious differences and all of those things. I mean, people, you know, I was fascinated to see that the Queen brought every religion together to work together to basically say, "Listen, I think religion is important, and we can all respect each other's religions," which was, I thought, you know, quite nice, quite forward.
Pretty significant these days.
Yeah, it is, to basically say, you know, hey, it's not just the Anglican Church here.
But then when researching on the gated community here where people could be protected from diversity, if you want to look at it that way, that doesn't work either, does it?
Oh, it's absolutely the biggest disaster of modern times. Because I think that what we're doing is basically shrouding ourselves and enclosing ourselves in sameness. And we're we're really creating a situation of us versus them and emphasizing it with a gate. So I think it is a mistake. Certainly the evidence has shown that it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, which is mainly to create safety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that quickly crime tends to rise just as much behind a gate. You know, thieves figure it's much more valuable if there's a gate around it.
Yeah.
So, you know,
here's where they keep the money.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a really bad tendency that's going on now. And I think that what we have to learn how to do much more, and that each of us can do on an individual level, as I say, starting with a small group or the group you already have, is start working for a bigger goal.
Hmm.
And you'll find that all those differences evaporate, because something about working together for a common goal just creates instant closeness. It's been studied, it's been looked at. You know, that's why the Amish build barns, because it's a way for everybody to feel a part of the whole. And it's just a remarkable way that you can bridge all kinds of divides. So for me, the model is really about looking really super locally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people have talked about the local movement, and I'm talking about the neighborhood movement,
mm-hmm.
or the office movement, you know, or the extended family movement, where you're just getting together with the family and doing stuff like that, and exploring ways to interconnect and to trade services or to work on something together. You know, I think about simple things that used to happen in my neighborhood when I was growing up in New Jersey in America, where the dads would get together and have a landscape brigade.
Mm.
And one day they would deal with one guy's backyard, and the next day they'd deal with another neighbor's backyard, and they'd all work and clean it up together. And they had a ball, and it was a real connecting exercise,
and
as well as something that had a function.
And it didn't matter if they were Republican or Democrat or pro-life or anything.
No, exactly. That's the whole connector.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it's going to change. But it has to really be a change of heart where we have to work on very deliberately getting rid of that competitive and divisive model.
And okay, so let's go back to possibility. During the shift, do you feel like there's evidence or there's been enough proof that there's a shifting frequency, meaning we're a little bit more movable than we've been in the past?
I think there's a lot going on now that is put us into crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, there's a lot of planetary things going on that have made people want to become more radicalized. You know, when people are uncomfortable, they want to be more radical. You know, when people are uncomfortable now, so many things aren't working for them. And, you know, so many people are out of work, so many people are out of their home, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that all of that is going on, and I think there's a lot of big planetary movements. Now, in my book, I demonstrate that we are profoundly affected by the planets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not really analyzing astrologically the traditional astrological ideas. I'm looking at what's hard science, and the hard science shows that we are profoundly affected both physically and psychically by solar activity, lunar activity, and lots of other planetary geomagnetic activity.
Mm.
So there's been an awful lot, unprecedented amounts of geomagnetic activity, which is going to be, for us, very energetically destabilizing.
Mm-hmm.
So it could well be that there are planetary things that are making us much more open to it. I'm certainly seeing that people are a lot more radical and ready for radical
mm-hmm.
than they were.
Well, one of the people that I've interviewed was talking, he did a lot of work on spirituality and business and the link between the two. And he said this was some years back, and then he said after a while, he noticed that when people were beginning to feel more and more afraid and business was more tenuous, they became much less able to connect spirituality and business. People were getting fear-based and losing their heart connection with it all. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is what's going on right now. People are retreating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're fear-based. They're retreating. They're looking for diversions from the ugly truth. But at some point, you know, it's probably no accident that the best-selling book on the planet right now is, you know, 50 Shades of Grey, you know, soft porn. People want, you know, diversity. They want diversion. They want to just not have to look at what's really going on now because people are frightened. My message has to be, and the message in my, you know, my groups and the things that I teach are all about, you know, don't be frightened. Here's the flashlight.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And it's actually not comforting. What am I trying to say? If you do these smaller groups, it is mutual recognition and mutual empowerment in a much more supportive. One of your people said in a group that she never felt so supported.
And exactly.
That's exactly what we need to begin. The revolution, if that's what it is.
Exactly. You need to feel that kind of amazing support, and you can have that and explore together how to make this shift. What sorts of mindsets do you have to have? How do you have to see the world differently?
Mm-hmm.
How do you have to relate differently? How can you become the change agent? How can each of you become a change agent? And that's another part of what I look at in the book. How can the tiniest actions make enormous changes? I tell a story about a woman called Marie who was in the typical dog-eat-dog office and was very frustrated because she didn't know what she could do. What could little old her do to change things? And so she thought, well, I'll just leave the change in my Coke machine every day when I get my Coke. And at first, this really totally destabilized her office. I mean, people were, you know, frantically emailing each other and creating a spy network to try to figure out who this secret Santa was. So, you know, Marie then decides to move to another floor and starts leaving donuts there. She ups her game. And this became a conversation for weeks and weeks and weeks. You know, and when she left the money or the donuts, she would leave this little note: these donuts have been left for you. Keep the spirit alive and pay it forward. Well, it became the dinner table conversation for weeks, and then it became the thing that really changed that culture in that office because it held a giant light up to what they'd all been doing. And everybody was reminded of who we really are, that we're meant to connect, we're meant to be generous, we're meant to
help,
you know,
each
we have
other
all of this.
And to be helpful, hey?
Yeah, and to be connected.
Mm-hmm.
We're meant to be connected. This is who we really are. This is our birthright. This is who we are, really are, and a few little things like that can easily change the whole culture around you. And so that's the other message is, this is how to do that. This is how you can be the change.
Well, I love that. And then you pay it forward, meaning it's what did you call it? Contagion.
Contagion. Yeah. Well, you can create an avalanche of goodwill, actually,
mm-hmm.
through things like this. Because people are, as I say, people imitate each other. And when you become the person doing something nice, it starts, and generous, it starts changing the whole game. And it also reestablishes what we're meant to be.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's like putting it out into the collective, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, again, I want to emphasize that I'm not suggesting we can't have individual achievement or individual thinking or, you know, or innovation or any of that. But what I'm really talking about is a model where it's not I win at other people's expense.
Mm-hmm. It's a win-win.
Yeah, it's a win-win. And it's also making use of and really benefiting and even supercharging your own intentions through the power of the group.
Mm. And I love that a lot of this is actually provable. I mean, if you want to be scientific, you can really read about it actually working. So when we come up to your workshop on the 24th of July in beautiful Whistler, you're going to be at the Brew Creek Center. That sounds like it's a lot of fun, doesn't it?
It's gorgeous. It looks so beautiful. It's this wonderful sort of pine wood retreat in these beautiful settings with creeks and almost that they look like little barns, et cetera. So I'm really excited about it. It's a perfect place to learn the bond.
Oh.
But yeah, it's there is information about it at it's the Brew Creek Center, and that's CENTRE.com/Lynn, LYNNE - McTaggart, MCTAGGERT. Shame on them, they spelt my name wrong. It's ERT in this, but it's usually ART. But brewcreekcenter.com, you'll find me. And there's information about how to sign up for my workshop.
And it says it's a place for conscious experience, and it's nested in such a beautiful, beautiful mountain scenario in BC. So what a location to learn how to explore. What are we going to do there? Learn how to explore our own bond?
Well, I'm going to teach people all the tools they need to start making the shift. I'm going to teach them to learn how to see much more, see the unseen, see the connections that are always there that they don't always see, learn to be a lot more intuitive, a lot more present to the total, the totality and the unity that is their lives. Secondly, I'm going to teach them a lot of tools about how to relate differently.
Mm-hmm.
Thirdly, I'm going to teach them how to do group healing intentions, group intentions, and working together for bigger goals, and how to bring that back and start doing that in their environment. And finally, I'm going to teach them tools to become their own change agents.
Wow.
And to understand how they can set off an avalanche of goodwill around them and an avalanche of change.
Sounds like it would be like a feast of a day where you get to really explore. Probably your own blocks would show up too, wouldn't they?
Well, I think so, because it's very interesting when we've gone through these workshops before. I remember one woman, I had them do a role play where she was Jewish, and I had her take another position, be an Arab, and take that position over
Israel. Oh, wow.
And she had a real hard time with it. She said, I can't take this. These are people. I can't understand a mindset that wants to kill me. And she had a real hard time with it, but I was, you know, a lot of her feelings came out, and a lot of people in the group were able to really help her.
Oh, did she break through, or did she, was she able to, soften her tension against it, or?
Yeah, she was able to see the other side,
hmm.
And I think that's the whole key element here, is to be able to see the whole, you know, that people of all persuasions have reasons, and the you know, they may not be the reasons you have, but they have a certain mindset and reasoning. And it's important to understand theirs to be able to connect across that divide. And just to emphasize this again, I mean, this is going to be the key to fixing things in our Western world, our falling down world, is connecting with people who are not like us and connecting across divides and learning a different way to relate to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I often think basically it doesn't matter which side of a war you're on. Everybody wants their kids home and everybody wants Sunday dinner or whatever, you know. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We all want the same things. We have different ways of achieving them, and we have certain, you know, bigger and distinct belief systems. But we oftentimes, those are our core values or our core beliefs. But the actual underlying things that we want are the same. And so that's one of the things of connecting to that and connecting past the beliefs that are limiting.
Wow, this is great work. Well, Lynn, we'll be seeing you on the 24th up there in beautiful BC at the Brew Creek Center.
Wonderful. I'm really looking forward to it, Veronica, and for anybody else who is out there. I also wanted to let you know, for people who are coming onto my website to find out more about The Bond, which is www.thebond.net, my new paperback, I wanted to let you know we have a lot of free gifts going out for people who buy it just now, since it's just out. But our friends, I mean, and these include many downloads and audio downloads that I've done to help people even further with all of the processes we've discussed.
Wonderful.
But our friends from Claris have done something really lovely. They want to support the bond, and so they're actually giving away a free Q-Link Classic for anybody who buys the bond. So all the information is on my site for anyone who's interested. And those are, as you probably know, resonate. They're frequency regulators, basically. They help to regulate your frequencies and prevent you from being harmed by electromagnetic stuff and mobile phone radiation and all sorts of stuff like that. And they've got a lot of science behind them.
I was just thinking it helps with entrainment by choice instead of just by
Exactly. It's more entrainment. Absolutely.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for your time and for your inspiration, Lynn, and for your wonderful book, The Bond, and also The Intention Experiment. None of us can forget that.
And, thank you.
We will see you on the 24th. And I say to everyone, thank you so much for listening and read The Bond. Join in the, I guess it's the revolution, the bubbling of consciousness through our species that you're helping with, Lynn. This is Veronica. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening. And any feedback is gratefully received at Veronica@VeronicaEntwistle.com. Good night and many blessings.